It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have 37 degrees and fair skies. Out at the airport, they are also reporting east winds at 6 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, high near 39. Calm winds turning to the southeast to 5 this afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Fisheries Work Group had another meeting, first in a long time. And FanCon was a big hit at the Kodiak Public Library last weekend. Plus, three airlines are adding nonstop flights from Anchorage to new destinations this summer. And after years of surveys and analysis, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is finally dismantling the long mothballed nuclear power plant at Fort Greely this summer. Those stories plus reading dogs after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Authorities have yet to formally identify the four missing people who are presumed dead after a cargo ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland 2 days ago. But we are starting to learn more about the names of some of them through victims' relatives. NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran tells us more about one of them.
Minor Suazo Sandoval came to the U.S. from Honduras nearly 20 years ago. His brother, Martin Suazo, describes him as generous.
Ayudando a los demás, eso era como él se sentía feliz.
He says helping others made his brother happy. Minor Suazo had been working for the last 2 years for the crew that maintains Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. He was there early Tuesday morning repairing potholes when the bridge collapsed. Suazo's brother said the 38-year-old will be dearly missed in his hometown, where he helped finance the building of a hotel that brought jobs to rural Azacualpa, Honduras. He also paid for people's medicines and doctor's appointments in the town. Sergio Martinez Beltran, NPR News.
Rebuilding the bridge is expected to take years. Engineer Matisse Levy, author of the book Why Buildings Fall Down, How Structures Fail, spoke to us about what he would propose if he were part of the team exploring the redesign.
The bridge is what you call fracture critical, which means that one span fails and then the whole thing comes down. I might advocate for a bridge that is built differently so that if one span fails, the other two spans would act independently.
Former Presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton are scheduled to appear with President Biden tonight in New York City. NPR's Elena Moore reports they'll attend a Biden re-election campaign fundraiser.
It's a sold-out show at Radio City Music Hall, and more than 5,000 supporters are expected to attend. According to the Biden campaign, the fundraiser will bring in over $25 million, which, they say, is, quote, the most successful political fundraiser in American history. The event comes as Biden continues to be neck and neck with former President Donald Trump in recent national polls. That said, Trump continues to trail Biden in fundraising. Elena Moore, NPR News.
The Georgia election interference case against former President Donald Trump resumed today, with Trump's team arguing the indictment should be thrown out. Lawyer Steve Sadow says claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election constitute political speech protected under the First Amendment. A prosecutor argued Trump's statements were not protected because they are central to criminal activity alleged in the Fulton County DA's racketeering case against the Republican and co-defendants. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 47 points before the close at 39,807. The S&P was up 5. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's Fisheries Work Group is planning an informal forum to speed up fish-related action items for the City Council and Borough Assembly. That was one decision the joint municipal body agreed on yesterday at its first meeting in over 4 years. The group has two representatives each from both the Council and Borough Assembly. John Whidden, one of the City Council members, made a promise regarding the future role of the group.
We have a sense of urgency in what we do, that we don't just meet to meet. Nobody needs more meetings. We also develop, when appropriate, and I think that today is one of those, is action items. What are the next steps? So if somebody just doesn't get up and speak at public comment or during a meeting and they go away and nothing ever changes.
The last time the work group was scheduled to meet was in March of 2020, but COVID squashed that. At the time, members were focused on fisheries research, critical habitat for humpback whales, and disaster funding for various species. The group tackled some of those same issues at its meeting this week, including that Kodiak fishers are still waiting on Pacific cod disaster funding from 2020. Julie Bonney of the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank told the working group the holdup is partially because the U.S. National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration hasn't yet awarded the grant funds.
The spend plan was approved in August of 2023, and those funds have, the application is stuck in D.C. with OMB and NOAA, and we had been originally told that those applications would be available in the first quarter of the year. Obviously, that hasn't happened.
Bonney was one of a dozen or so residents who attended Wednesday's meeting. The public suggested a variety of ideas for the working group's consideration, such as opening up waterfront property in Kodiak, purchasing a community cold storage facility, and increasing lobbying efforts in Washington, D.C. Fisheries work group members say they will identify priorities and actionable items for their next meeting on May 8th. Kodiak Public Library hosted the island's second ever popular culture convention, FanCon, last weekend. Attendees competed in video game tournaments, watched movies, made various crafts together, and heard from a published author. KMXT's Brian Venwa stopped by and has this story.
Libraries are usually known for being quiet, but last weekend the Kodiak Public Library was anything but as dozens came out for FanCon. Volunteers in blue shirts walked back and forth running various booths and announcing when events would start. One popular booth was manned by Guy Bartleson from the village of Port Lyons. He brought some of his most valuable pieces from his decades-old comic book collection to show off.
The Ghost Rider's worth about $1,500. However, first appearance of Iron Man, it's about a $10,000 book.
That was just a small fraction of his stash at home. Bartleson also sold comic books at the convention. Most went for as little as 50 cents to a few dollars a piece.
A lot of stuff I brought, too, is also duplicates and triplicates of things I picked up over the years. I might find a collection that has some books in it I really like, and I'll buy the whole collection.
He even gave some away, especially to kids, to get them excited about reading. That type of enthusiasm is the whole point of the convention. FanCon is the brainchild of Bailey Berry.
We had a whole planning committee this year. They were fantastic, really helped up our game from last year. And then we have lots of volunteers that you've seen wearing the shirts and our library staff as well that I've roped into this.
Entrance was free and included video game tournaments, movies, and shopping. There was even a painting tutorial hosted by Grand Slam Toys and Games, a local store downtown. Similar conventions have become increasingly popular for franchises like Lord of the Rings and the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies as a way to connect old fans and find new ones. But events like these are often in bigger cities, and Kodiak residents would have to fly and pay for hotels on top of any entrance fees. Barry says she wanted to keep the local event as accessible as possible.
You know, there's a lot of people that can't afford to get off island, can't because of work, and so to offer something that's here and free, accessible to everyone, was kind of a key tenet for us.
Locals weren't the only ones in attendance either. The featured author this year was Heidi Lynn Burke, who goes by H.L. Burke on her books. She's from Oregon, and this was her first time in Alaska. It was also her first time as a solo featured author for an event.
I've done author events before, but I've never had one that actually flew me up before, so it makes me feel a little bit like a celebrity, which is not something you get a lot as a small independent author.
Burke gave a talk about writing as part of her visit to Kodiak, as well as ran a table promoting her work. She first started seriously publishing a decade ago, and she's already published dozens of books, mostly about superheroes. Burke says she's been to a few bigger conventions before, but working smaller ones like Kodiak's FanCon gives her more opportunities to connect with people.
I like interacting with people and talking about writing, and you always meet a couple people who are interested in getting into it, and you can talk to them about how it happens and stuff.
Other booths included various kinds of fandom-themed merchandise for sale, like stuffed toys or earrings. But Barry, the organizer, says she's just happy to see people coming together to have fun.
I am excited to see people that I normally wouldn't see in the library come and discover that we have this really great resource in Kodiak. And also really excited to see more cosplayers this year. Last year we only had a couple, but this year I've seen some really cool ones.
Barry says she hopes to continue growing FanCon and have another event next year. Checking out at the Kodiak Public Library, I'm Brian Benoit.
Three airlines are adding nonstop flights from Anchorage to new destinations this summer. Airport officials hope a new state program could encourage airlines to offer even more new routes in the future. Alaska Public Media's Ava White has more.
Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport is adding four new routes this summer. Alaska, Delta, and United Airlines will begin nonstop service to New York City, Detroit, San Diego, and Washington, D.C. Dulles International Airports this summer. Eric Peterson is the communications coordinator for the Anchorage Airport. He says there's been a growing demand for direct flights to and from the state's largest city. He says the airport is expecting a 6% increase in passenger traffic this year.
And I think that just there's a huge demand for both tourists to come and visit and see all the great things Alaska has to offer. We are also here to the people of Alaska, and they want to go on trips too.
Peterson says flights to and from New York have been popular among flyers, so it wasn't a surprise to him when Alaska Airlines announced it's adding that nonstop route starting in June. Rural residents will benefit too. Normally, if someone from a rural community wanted to fly to the East Coast, they'd make at least three connections. But this summer, they have the option of making only two. Peterson says offering flights to new destinations meets the mission of the airport.
We as the airport hope to facilitate as much passenger traffic as possible. We would love hundreds of routes. All year round.
The Alaska Department of Transportation introduced a program this year called the International Passenger and Cargo Service Incentive Program, which aims to encourage airlines to try new routes. To be eligible, it has to be a new service or not flown in the last 13 months. Airlines pay a landing fee to airports each time a plane lands based on the number of passengers. When enrolled in the program, airlines get their landing fees waived for the first 13 touchdowns. Peterson says all landing fees for the summer could be waived through the program depending on how often the route is scheduled.
So we're very excited whenever an airline not only starts a new route, but also if they have a route that they're increasing the frequency of flights, shows good demand.
Peterson says airlines are more likely to increase flight frequency when there's a high demand. He says the increased routes aren't a direct result of the program because it was just announced, but he hopes to see the program grow. Scott McMurrin, who writes the Alaska Travelgram newsletter, says the four new summer destinations have been a long time coming. He says flights to Detroit, New York, and Washington, D.C. are especially exciting because they're hub cities for international airlines.
So United's new service from here to Washington, D.C. is huge. It's daily service from Anchorage to their hub at Dulles. So they fly from Dulles to the rest of the world. I mean, Europe, I think they may even have flights from Africa.
Alaska's flight between Anchorage and San Diego only runs on Saturdays. If it's popular, McMurrin said the airline might consider offering daily service next summer. When an airline is testing a prospective route, he said it's common for them to run once a week. When airlines consider establishing new routes, McMurrin says they look at how many people are getting on and off the planes. They then determine if the route would be successful. He says several airlines have tested direct flights out of Anchorage.
For a couple summers, Frontier Airlines flew up here from Portland and Denver and also Fairbanks to Denver and stuff like that. Sun Country Airlines, they fly here now, but they have flown a number of different routes from Fairbanks and also from Anchorage. JetBlue came up here for several years. Really miss them.
McMurrin says the flights benefit tourists traveling to Alaska. He says flights with United Airlines are huge contributors to the state's tourism economy because they come from across the nation. He says United Airlines has offered various seasonal nonstop flights for several years, and he's excited for more options for direct flights.
So this is like another jewel in the crown for United's service to Alaska.
McMurrin says Alaska is a popular travel destination, and he doesn't expect that to change anytime soon. He says the goal for airlines is likely to make Alaska the end destination, not an intermediate stop. In upcoming years, McMurrin says he hopes to see a direct flight between Anchorage and Tokyo, Japan. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
After years of site surveys and analysis, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is preparing to begin dismantling a long mothballed nuclear power plant at Fort Greely this summer. The facility's reactor was removed and shipped outside 50 years ago, but the structure itself and other hazardous materials at the site still need to be removed and disposed of. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Army Corps of Engineers is beginning a five-year process for removing what remains of Fort Greely's Cold War-era SM-1A nuclear power plant.
The first two large tasks that we're going to do is build our weather enclosure at the site, which will allow for year-round work for our crew.
Brenda Barber is the Corps' program manager for the decommissioning project.
And then we're going to actually build a waste storage area as well.
The storage facility will be built on Fort Greely about a half mile from the SM-1A site. Barber says the containerized waste material will be kept there until the Corps begins shipping them next year to a facility in Texas. She says initially most of that will be construction waste contaminated with substances that were commonly used when the plant was built in the 1950s.
Asbestos, lead-based paint, universal waste, because those increase our exposure. More so than the radioactivity.
Barber says the Corps last year studied the feasibility of disposing of those more conventional kinds of wastes in a local landfill operated by the city of Delta Junction. But she told city officials the Corps declined that proposal due to stringent state and federal regulatory hurdles.
We expressed to them what the process would entail. It is a lengthy process.
Barber reiterated that point Monday when she was asked about the waste disposal during a meeting in Delta about the demolition project.
Non-regulated radioactive waste. Are we talking about construction waste?
Construction waste, RCRA waste, PCB waste. So everything at this point will be transported out of the state of Alaska. We don't intend to leave anything behind.
Delta Mayor J.W. Musgrove welcomed those assurances.
I think it alleviates the concerns of a lot of people that something contaminated could slip by. Yeah.
Barber says the team will send an average of 2 truckloads of the waste material weekly beginning next year. She says the agency will try to schedule trips around the Richardson Highway's already heavy truck traffic that now includes Moncho Mine ore haul rigs.
We really do understand there are some concerns with Kinross Mines. I hope to coordinate with them on dispersing our traffic load with their traffic load.
Barber said the team also learned the importance of coordinating with the 11th Airborne Division after they encountered a long convoy of military vehicles and equipment moving slowly down the Richardson to training ranges around Fort Greely.
Yeah, we were here at the height of that military exercise, so we definitely saw what you guys were experiencing. We experienced it ourselves.
Once the truckloads of waste get to Fairbanks, they'll be loaded onto Alaska Railroad cars and transported to either Anchorage or Whittier, then barged to Seattle and taken by rail to a nuclear waste repository in Texas. Barber says the Corps will be holding more public meetings before the trucking begins and throughout the project, which is scheduled to be completed in 2029. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
For some children, reading aloud can be intimidating, even scary. But a new program at the Kenai Community Library allows young readers to build confidence while connecting with a four-legged friend. As KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, the judgment-free reading event uses trained therapy dogs that foster a calming environment.
Come on, slow folks, get your tails moving. Welcome aboard Feline Skies. Chapter 2. Wow, look at all this stuff for our seats.
Inside the library's activity room, 11-year-old Chase Irwin reads aloud to a small, captive audience.
Before we take off, let's go over the safety features of this airplane.
The book, titled Waffles and Pancake, Flight or Fright, is about two feline friends flying in an airplane for the first time. While Chase's human support team smiles at the book's humorous storyline, one curious pup listens with intent, at one point even sniffing the hardcover.
Good morning, cats and kittens. We are anticipating a smooth hairball-free flight today.
Oh my gosh, what a funny book.
The library's Reading Dogs event is 100% voluntary, allowing elementary and middle school-aged children an opportunity to practice their reading skills with a certified therapy dog. The event was inspired by similar programs held by libraries and hospitals around the country.
There's a huge correlation between reading comprehension and public speaking and being able to read aloud.
This is Seth Wilson Gray, the library's youth services coordinator.
So there was a huge push to practice reading aloud, practice your skills, but it can be hard when you're around your peers, when you're around other students, because that fear that, oh, I'm going to mess up. If I mess up, they're going to make fun of me. And so how do you improve? How do you get better if you're afraid of reading aloud?
The confidence-building event was first held at the library in January and had a turnout of about 15 excited young readers. Participants in Tuesday's Reading Dogs program had the chance to read to one of three therapy dogs in a 15-minute session.
Having been a child who was afraid to read in front of the classroom, I felt like reading to the dogs was a safe environment for the kids.
That's Susie Stevens, who pitched the Reading Dogs event to the library. She's also a part of the Alliance of Therapy Dogs, a nonprofit that provides comprehensive testing and certification support to therapy dogs and their owners.
There's no judgment, there's no expectations, no correction. It's just enjoying reading to somebody who is willing to listen to you and not interfere.
Stevens is the owner of Grit, an 18-month-old Doberman Pinscher who loves being read to. She says he's a calm, obedient dog who's been trained in a number of public environments.
He just loves being around people, and it's just really a gift to have a dog like him who is just so willing to share himself with everybody.
You know, I was really scared when I took my first flight too. You were? Remember what the cat attendant said, and you'll be fine.
For young Chase, the event is more than just an opportunity to practice his reading skills with Grit. It also gives him a chance to reconnect with man's best friend after losing his dog, Kenai, a few months ago.
I think it's a great idea to help kids connect with dogs. Some kids could be scared of dogs, and then they come to this event, and they could actually be friends with dogs.
While library staff believe the event will help local children improve their reading and comprehension skills, they also hope it will provide children with a lasting memory of the library. Here's Chase again.
Grit is just a happy, enjoyable dog to be around, and he loves people, and he's calm. I just think of him as a great dog to be around.
The Kenai Community Library's next Reading Dogs event will be held on April 24th from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. Registration for the event is required. To see a full lineup of the library's calendar of events, be sure to visit their website. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
While record snowfall brought plenty of extra shoveling and plowing work for the Bethel area this year, it also set the stage for the dazzling array of icicles seen along the city's many metal roofs in March. As the cold and sunny recent weather has held, some have grown to massive proportions, and KYUK's Evan Erickson and Alex Salonga set out to investigate.
Without access to professional equipment, it's unclear whether KYUK's improvised icicle measurement device is up to the job. The 10-foot tape measure zip-tied to a cheap tent pole sways wildly, But then the pole wiggles into place under a massive shelf of ice and snow hanging off the side of the KYUK station building and offers a solid reading.
Yeah, I'm going to do a second measurement here. Oh!
You go ahead?
Yeah, we're right at 89 and a half inches.
That's 7 feet, 5.5 inches. And it could end up being one of the longest in the field. But nearby at the cultural center, an icicle that appears to be even longer hangs from the far corner of the building.
This is the insane one. You see it?
A metal stairway provides convenient access to the high awning, and again, the measuring stick finds its mark.
I can't really see it, so I might have you call that one.
But looks can be deceiving.
Yeah, I think it's like 6'9".
Oh, no way. Was it 6'9"?
Yeah, right. It was right by here.
KYUK is 7'5".
Oh. With KYUK still the icicle to beat, the search continues around town. There has been talk of some possible contenders hanging off the side of the Swanson's grocery store.
Got about 70 inches and 3/4. Actually, I'm going to call this 71 inches Swanson's.
But while visually stunning, Swanson's fails to even bring a 6-footer to the table. The situation is no better at the courthouse and fire station at 63 inches and 57 inches, respectively. The Association of Village Council Presidents Tribal Jobs Center barely edges out the courthouse at 63.5 inches, while the Vitus Fuel Station tops out at just 49 inches. But then tucked in the maze of buildings behind the hospital, a giant hangs from the low roof of the old YKHC hostel building. By a margin of 0.5 inch, it beats out the KYUK icicle.
90 inches exactly. Oh, I think we can get one more. And then, can you get through that way? This is gnarly. How much snow fell? Like 5 feet?
With the competition neck and neck, the search moves north. The Alaska Commercial Complex yields little of interest, but at Bethel Regional High School, a behemoth hangs from the corner of the gymnasium.
Got some fierce winds here.
The tent pole swings wildly in the wind. One of the zip ties pops loose and the measuring tape separates from the pole.
Oh no,
But then the unwieldy device manages to get a reading. 8 feet, 10 inches long.
106 inches.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 106! Well, that was the dream, man.
By a 16-inch margin over the second-place finisher, Bethel Regional High School emerges as champion. But with spring weather right around the corner, it's unlikely it will have to defend its title anytime soon.
The U.S. economy just keeps growing. I'm Henry Epp with the Marketplace Minute. The country's gross domestic product grew even faster than we thought in the fourth quarter of 2023. The Department of Commerce revised GDP growth up 0.2% to 3.4%. That was due in part to increases in spending by consumers and state and local governments. Americans' feelings about the economy didn't change much in the past month, according to the latest consumer sentiment reading from the University of Michigan. The index rose 3% from February, but compared to a year ago, it's up 28%. Insurance claims from the Baltimore Bridge collapse could near $4 billion, according to Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's tells the BBC the disaster could be one of the largest marine insurance losses in history. I'm Henry Epp with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 28th day of March, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 7:46. It will set again at 8:43. That will give us 12 hours and 56 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees. That was set in 1924, and then again 10 years later in 1934. And our record low was 12 degrees, set in 1925. Currently 37 degrees under fair skies. It has been a beautiful day. East winds at 6 miles per hour at the airport and 10 miles of visibility there. Mostly sunny skies are predicted for the rest of the day, with a high near 39. Calm winds turning to the southeast around 5 later. Tonight, look for rain and snow late, mainly after 5 a.m. Low around 31 overnight tonight, with south winds to 15. And that rain and snow is expected to continue tomorrow morning until it becomes all rain about 8 a.m. High near 44 tomorrow, southeast winds to 25, should come down to 10 or 15 in the afternoon. And for Friday night, just a chance of rain followed by a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy skies overnight on Friday too, with a low around 36. And they're calling for rain for Saturday. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. The tide has turned in the last hour or so. Our next high tide will happen at 4:49 p.m. and be 7 feet here on the east side, followed by a low tide at 11:23 p.m. of 1.8 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:14 p.m. and be 12.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:01 p.m. of 2.5 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Thursday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly is having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. That wasn't supposed to happen. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning for tomorrow. For today, southwest winds to 15 knots, becoming south 20 tonight. 2-foot seas becoming 4-foot seas, and then building to 8 feet after midnight. For tomorrow, south winds to 35 knots, becoming southwest 20 in the afternoon with 11-foot seas on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow. Southwest 15 becoming south 20 tonight, 3-foot seas, building to 6 feet after midnight. Look for east winds to 30 knots to start after midnight or so. Southeast 30 tomorrow becoming southwest 20 in the afternoon and seas to 7 feet. Should make for some jumbly seas. We are nearing the end of PFD filing season. If you haven't filed yet, this is a good time to start thinking about that. The deadline is March 31st. Today is the 28th. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative is having its annual meeting, and they're having a vendor market as well. That will take place on Thursday. That's today. There will be a vendor market from 5 to 6 p.m., and the meeting will be conducted from 6 to 7 p.m., and it's all happening at the Kodiak College. Light refreshments will be served. All are welcome, but you have to be a KHFC member to vote in the Board of Directors election. But again, that's today. Vendor market starts at 5 o'clock at the Kodiak College. Things happening at the library include tomorrow's Teen Tabletop Day. That goes on from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Immerse yourself in the world of tabletop gaming with a collection over 100 games. That's for ages 13 and up. And on Saturday, the Kodiak Public Library Association will have a children's book sale. If you're needing a few children's books, Saturday, March 30th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the multipurpose room of the library. And Kodiak College is having its cabin fever reliever and business after hours at the college. That's happening on Friday, tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. Enjoy a night of food and fun at Kodiak College. Engage in a variety of mini sessions from their community education courses. Learn about Kodiak College programs and visit their community education art show and enjoy complimentary appetizers and beverages. That all starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow at Kodiak College. So things going on tonight and tomorrow at the college.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.